You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
Nationwide is for noobs. We are worldwide. We are the Church of the Lampshade Show. And once again, coming back to you, blasting into your Tuesday. Good times ahead, folks. Just about guarantee it. Glad you could join us for 86th installment of the Church of the Lampshade Show. We've got a lot of ground to cover this week. We're not gonna waste any time. We've got to pack a lot into roughly an hour. As always, we like to start off thanking those who financially support the show. That's right. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. That information at the bottom of the description page. We have snail mail. We've got Bitcoin. It's not hard to learn, folks. If you have another weirdo cryptocurrency, drop me an email. That's down there as well, and I'll do my best to get you an address for that. We got around 8 supporters blasting in this week. As I said last week, the Diversity Post Office has been on the case, and you know, I had like one last week. And I'm pretty much sure that what they do is, like, when they get behind, they just stack the mail up, and then when they catch up, they shove it all in there at once. So I never freak out. I go in there, and there's, like, for a whole week, there's one envelope. I don't get downhearted. I know y'all are out there. I know y'all are supporting the show. I just say, well, next week will be a banner week. And once again, it is much appreciated, and let's get right to it, because like I said, we're going to cover a lot of ground. I already have a general idea what we're going to discuss today, and we got to hit a lot of stuff to get it all in, and we're going to do it. So getting back to it, David received, very much appreciated, from Bill, ties for October. Got him. Very, like I say, yeah, we do appreciate it. Makes a big difference, not just financially, but the morale boost. That's why I love this. I love reading the notes and stuff from everybody, because it reminds me, I'm not just sitting here talking to myself. It's real easy to start feeling that way sometimes. Keeping it rolling from Nick. Dear Grandpa, saw the clown car dropping past the window. Might have been pulling out of the nosedive. Keep up the good work. And God bless. Much appreciated. And as far as the other part that you've got down here, I will take care of that. I will forward that along. And the clown car careens onward, folks. There is no pulling out. We're just all along for the ride. Andy, keep them coming, Grandpa. You know we're going to do it. No way. We can't stop. Debbie, I love how regular conservatives are now being called racists and Nazis, even by their own families. I can't wait until all white people are called racist and Nazis. People keep trying to convince me of the pre-tribulation rapture. I've never believed in that. Anyways, I'm reading my Bible more. Thank you for the shows. I look forward to them every week. I pray for you and your family, and I pray for all of the believers as well. I do. I pray for all of y'all very sincerely. A couple things here, and I've been reflecting on it, you know, for years now. I've told people that as this comes, kind of prophetic on my part, to be honest. I said, by the time this is all over, you'll either stand with the communists or you'll stand with the Nazis. I've said that for years. And it's funny, because people, I think a lot of the people that heard that at the time, you know, imagined that I was saying that people be walking around waving swastika, literally like waving swastika flags around. But it is come to pass, anybody who is not with the communists is a Nazi. And sometimes you see them turn on their own, and all of a sudden somebody that last week was one of them, they get purged, just like the old Bolsheviks. They get purged, and all of a sudden they're a Nazi. They're finding Nazis everywhere. And when it comes down to it, it's like, basically, if you're white, it's like this term white supremacist. They keep throwing this around, white supremacist. And I have yet to find anybody that can tell you what it actually means. You're just supposed to assume you know what it means. And most people hear it and they assume they know what it means. It means somebody that's what? Walking around, you're supposed to conjure up images of somebody in a clown or a clown out, a Klan outfit, you know, wearing the sheet and burning a cross and chasing poor innocent black children while they burn their churches down or something. Is people like that? But they can't actually. I mean, that doesn't even, that's not even a thing. So what does it mean? I have yet to find anybody who could tell you what it actually means. What is a white supremacist? What is a neon Nazi? What are any of these? They're just disqualify terms. It's like a broader use when you, back when we were on social media, like Twitter and stuff, and you would have people try to win an argument with disqualify, you're a bad thinker. So nothing you say matters. Pay no attention to your truth because they're a bad person. It's just a disqualify term. It means don't listen to this person. They're officially a non-person. You can't listen to them. But no, now everybody, I mean, it was funny because during the debates and some of this stuff, that we're getting into today and like this right here. I touched on a little bit on last Friday's Clown World in Review with Sven Longshanks, a.k.a. the Daily Nationalist. But we're going to get into it a little deeper here. But yeah, it was funny during the debate, Chris Wallace tries to pin down Trump about denouncing white supremacists. And Trump's like, who? Name somebody. And it's like Chris Wallace throws the Proud Boys out there. It is like he has nobody. He couldn't think of anybody because it's a non-existent term. So he throws, the only thing he could come up with was the Proud Boys, whose leader is black. You know, I'm not sure how this white supremacy thing is supposed to work, but I'm pretty sure you wouldn't have your group being led by a black guy. It's just nonsensical. But he throws this out there. You know, the white supremacist Proud Boy. Well, what it means is anybody, basically, so that tells us what it means is anybody who opposes the communist agenda is a white supremacist Nazi. So there you are. The point has always been, I guess what I'm trying to get to, there is a point here. The point has always been that with the communists, there is no sitting it out. There's no middle ground. There's no keeping your head down. And maybe they won't bother me. Maybe they won't notice me. Because if you are not actively supporting them, if you are not an active part of their cause, then you are going to be a bad thinker, especially if you're white. You are going to be a bad thinker. You're going to be a Nazi. You're going to be a white supremacist. And apparently, if you're a black leader of something like the Proud Boys, you too are a white supremacist. This is how absurd it is, because it has no actual meaning. You think of these things, you hear these terms, you always want to call them on these terms. The best thing Trump could have responded with was, I don't know what that means. Tell me what a white supremacist is, and force Chris Wallace to actually define it for him, because I can guarantee you he can't. It's a term that doesn't have an actual definition. It's a bad term. And again, we're going to get into that some more in the rest of the show. As far as the pre-tribulation rapture, I did a show at some point on it. I don't remember when. I probably need to do another one because it is bullshit. There is absolutely no scriptural backing for this notion that you get to escape all the bullshit, that Jesus has got a special list of people. I mean, yeah, he's got people that are saved. He's got people that are his people. But if you're in the elite group, he's going to show up and pull you out so you don't have to put up with any of the bullshit that's coming. And that's absolute nonsense. There's no scriptural basis for it. Something that was just, you know, historically speaking, it's a fairly modern concept. And again, I guess I probably need to cover it again on a show in the future in the Christian specific segment, because it's for whatever scriptural reference people can find, it's horribly misinterpreted. But no, there's going to be no pre-tribulation rapture. It's one of those things I'm quite confident in. You don't get a special teleportation out of the clown car. You get to ride it to the bottom. Got two from Mr. T this week because his last week was held up at the post office, I'm sure. GPL, thank you again for what you do for the remnant and the stones that you take from the hands of the devil. God bless. Well, God bless all of y'all. And we all are going to get a chance, folks. Some of us are out here kind of, you know, the public face, but we're just like the face of y'all. I mean, any stones thrown at us are really being thrown at y'all as well. It's their strength in unity. And I do really, I don't know how to say it, but I really do think of this as a congregation. And I know that sounds kind of maybe trite or something like that, because this is, you know, our Church of the Lampshade is here on the internet, but I do. I think of all of you as a part of the show. I've always said that. And I do. I think of this as a congregation, and that's one of the reasons I enjoy the mailbag. It reminds me that, you know, it's not just me. that you know, we are as a group, we have a strength in as a group. So anyway, got to wrap up the mailbag. Like I say, we've got a lot of stuff we want to cover this week. And again, I really do appreciate it. If you want to be a part of financially supporting the show, then that's information's at the bottom of the page. So as I said earlier, we had a fun Friday edition of the Daily Nationalist. I always like to call it Clown World in Review. And normally Sven and I go through a news story. We find something fairly funny and we go through it. We try to end the week on a lighter topic, but it's just, we were just hard pressed for material and we wound up just kind of doing a freewheeling, like a seat of the pants kind of show. And if you know me, if you've been listening to me for any amount of time, you know, that is like my specialty. Whenever on the rare occasions I do a show with somebody else, you know, especially if it's somebody I haven't done a show with, like Sven and I have been doing shows together for so many years now that, I mean, he already knows, but like, I sit down to do a show with somebody that I haven't ever done a show with, and they're like, where are the show notes? It's like, dude, you're with GPL. We don't do show notes. This is just, we're barnstorming. This is like barnstorming of broadcasting. We just fly by the seat of our pants and see where it takes us. So you got to be able to think on your feet. You got to be ready. It's always more fun that way. But we did a fun show. And I touched on some of this stuff then, and I was sitting here reflecting on it before sitting down to record this week. And I thought, I'm going to get into this a little more because it really, I think it needs to be, we need to bear down on it a little bit because this is so centered on the clown world we live in. And this is the concept I wrote down here of a forced false reality. It's like life has become a forced meme, a forced viral video. It's like when the media, you know, you've been on the interwebs for years and you know when something's viral and you see a video and it's like, oh, wow, everybody's talking about this. But it's always so cringy when you turn on the network narrative in the morning and they're like, oh, this video is going viral. And it's some cringe thing that you've never seen before. And it's like, if it was viral, you wouldn't have to tell us about it. You're just trying to produce. It's like you're just trying to force it. Or you see a meme that they try to push, like, oh, this meme is going viral. It's like, that meme is cringe. That is a shit tear meme. We know what real memes look like. We know what real memes look like, and that is not a real meme. It's a forced meme. But we live in a reality that is like a forced meme. A reality itself is a forced meme reality where they just take... We know this world that we live in, this clown world we live in, is basically a lie. Everything, I mean, we're just bombarded with constant bullshit and everything is a lie and they just keep forcing it down us, you know, down our throats and demanding that we go along with it. But we do, it's like they're trying to create a fake reality and they're just wanting to force it on us. They want to force meme it into our being, into our consciousness. And I was thinking, I jotted down several of these, you know, this rare occasion that I actually jotted things down before the show. Of course, it was like 5 minutes before the show. But hey, it counts as show prep in the Grandpa Lampshade world. And of course, the big thing we had this past week is, you know, they announced that Trump and the First Lady have tested positive for the COVID, the doom flu. And I was sitting around this morning having my first cup of coffee. I'm on coffee cup number two. And I was thinking about, you know, is there something more going on here? Because, I mean, at this point, we all know this COVID thing's bullshit. I mean, we do. I guess some people still believe they're all going to die. But where are the bodies? That question keeps coming up time and again. If this is true, then where are all the bodies? The census says that people aren't dying left and right. Well, anyway, we know it's bullshit. I guess some people still believe it, but you have to think the president of the United States has got to be informed enough to know at this point's bullshit. Of course, when it first came about, we didn't know. I mean, we had very limited information. All of a sudden, we were being told this was this huge, horrible thing. We're all going to die from it. And I mean, even I was like, well, I don't know. You know, maybe it is. How do you know? You just got the information you're given, and it wound up being a lie. They've morphed it. We went from, well, we have to make sure the hospitals don't get overwhelmed. So we have to spread out the infection rate. Flatten the curve. That's what we were told. Flatten the curve. Only now the lockdown continues and they're saying they basically have to continue until nobody catches the virus, which is completely unrealistic. It's a virus. I don't care if you do everything they tell you, social distance, you lock yourself in your house, you wear your cuck muzzle, you do everything, you know, you wash your hands constantly, you eat live and breathe hand sanitizer. At some point in time, you are going to ingest the virus. It is a freaking virus. That is how they work. You're not going to avoid it. It is impossible. It's not like, you know, I don't know, an STD virus where you have to do a specific thing to catch it. This is an airborne virus. You at some point are going to get exposed to the virus. It's completely unrealistic. And yet, they're telling us we're going to force this lockdown. We're going to continue this lockdown because otherwise we have to make sure nobody catches it because it is so deadly. Yet there's no bodies stacking up. If it's that deadly, why aren't the funeral homes being overwhelmed? Yeah, they're always talking about hospitals are going to be overwhelmed at any minute. But if it's this deadly, it would be funeral homes that are being overwhelmed, and yet they're not. Heck, we should all be going into the mortician business. It's a great free market opportunity. We could all become morticians overnight. Because of all the bodies stacking up, anybody go get the license and a shovel? You two are a mortician and you're making bank. Why, the government's going to have to give special funding to the morticians to help cover the cost of all of these burials from the massive death rate of the coveted virus. And yet, none of that. So we know it's bullshit. Yeah, but now we're being told that I was just thinking about this, you know, and I hate to get off in Q land here. I'm just kind of thinking out loud. About this, we're suddenly being, because you had Trump come out, you remember about a month or so back, he was talking about he's made very powerful people angry and you may not see him for a while, but then like we seen him like the next day, it's like, what the hell is he on about? But now we've been handed an excuse not to see the president of the United States or the first lady for 2 weeks, you know, and not think anything about it. And the media is laying this groundwork. They're going on about the 25th Amendment and if the president is incapacitated, he's officially replaced by the vice president and all of this. And I'm thinking, what if there's like a silent coup going on right now inside the White House? I say, not, it's just a fun thought to banter around. I'm not saying it's real, but what if? Because we know his cabinet's full of traitors. We know this. They're constant unnamed White House sources. And granted, a lot of that, I think, is just the media making shit up wholesale. But we know. I mean, he's surrounded by traitors. You know, whenever they have material like, Mr. President, your own FBI director and your own director of Homeland Security says the biggest threat to the nation right now are white supremacists. Well, you know that he's surrounded by traitors. Have to question if there's a coup going on right now. Maybe all those, you know, when he was saying that he wasn't going to accept the results of an openly frauded election, you know, maybe, you know, he made that standby comment. Maybe they thought, we better move now. We better move sooner rather than later. I don't know. Or it could be something opposite. Maybe Trump is doing something and he's got to be out of sight for a while he pulls it off. Or they just could be going over the top with the COVID thing. I don't know. But you have to know that, you have to think that Trump by now understands that this thing is bullshit, that it's essentially a hoax. It's not a hoax in the sense that it doesn't exist, but it's a hoax in the sense of it's this big deadly thing that is going to wipe everybody out. I mean, we know that's wrong. But yet, if you turn on the media, they go on about it. I mean, they go on about it like it is. And, oh my gosh, you've got to socially distance. You got to, it's everywhere, everywhere. Keep your distance. They have this ad campaign in Texas right now. Keep a part of Texas. You know, apart. Don't get close to one another because you're going to catch the doom flu and all die. It's everywhere. Stay safe. Oh, we're having an event. Of course, we will be social distancing and requiring masks. But it's bullshit. But they don't care that you know it's bullshit. They keep forcing it. It's like they keep forcing this shitty meme on us of the doom flu. We're all going to die from it. We know it's bullshit. They don't care. They just keep on pretending like it's reality. You turn on the TV and there's the news anchors sitting 6 feet apart from one another and shaking their heads about a story about some horrible, selfish person that wants to kill their grandmother because they're not wearing a mask. We know it's bullshit. They don't care. We know it's bullshit. They're just going to keep on about it as though it's real. I was thinking about the debate, and then they brought up this. Chris Matthews brought up to Trump that, you know, How do you put it? How does he feel or whatever about the science of climate change? And they put it in the context of these fires that happen in California every freaking year. The science. How do you, what are your feelings on, do you accept the science of climate change? The science of climate change. There is no science to climate change. Again, we know it's bullshit. There are numerous scientists who will tell you it's bullshit. But those scientists don't get it. It's just like the corona. You got any number of virus experts, doctors, scientists who will tell you this is bullshit. What they're doing in the name of the virus is bullshit. They don't count. They're not the real experts. You need to listen to Fauci. You need to listen to what's her name? Birx. The science. Do you deny the science of climate change? It's a typical appeal to authority argument. And if you've been arguing with commies any amount of time on the internet, you recognize it right away. Oh, yes, well, I've got this expert. I guess you don't have a PhD, do you? As if that magically makes something true or not. A piece of paper magically makes something true. How do you feel about the science of climate change? How do you feel about the fact that you've had to go to climate change because first it was global cooling, then it was global warming, then at some point in time they had to finally admit that statistically the Earth was in a cooling cycle, so they just morphed it to climate change. But sometimes they forget that and they'll throw global warming back out there. But technically, by the data, the Earth has been in a cooling cycle. So, yeah, well, we're just going to go with climate change there. Now we don't have to keep switching it back and forth. But if it was really about science, it wouldn't be a problem. You say, oh, well, you know, because real science is having a hypothesis and testing it. And if your hypothesis is proven false, then you discard that hypothesis for a new one. Not in climate change. In climate change, the Earth is going to get cold. We're going to have a second ice age and all die. Oh, wait, the data says that's bullshit. No problem. We just change that, scratch out cooling, ice age, and go with warming, and we're all going to burn up. Oh, wait, it's back in a cooling cycle. Let's scratch that out and turn that into climate change. It's anything but science. But they make the appeal to authority. They tell us it's real. It's authority. The authority of science. You would not defy the priesthood, the holy priesthood of science, would you? It's like a religion for the godless. I bow before your white lab coat. It's like the whole COVID thing. I keep coming back to it. During the first round of this, when they were running around, bowing down and worshiping healthcare heroes. They're making murals of healthcare workers in their scrubs with a Superman cape. It was absolutely freaking disgusting. And I thought the troop worship after 9/11 was sickening. But this was disgusting. The healthcare heroes. Bow down and wish. Scientists are like your new god to be prevented this week. There's so much idolatry in this wicked land. Oh, God's judgment is upon this land. Idolatry of science, that is your latest god. If you have no god, you can worship science. They set the terms of the narrative this way, whether it be white supremacists, COVID, whatever. They set the terms of the narrative, and you're supposed to accept those terms and then argue from a defensive position. It's a tactic they use time and time again, and it always works unless you just call them out on their bullshit. That is the only way. Like I say, Trump should have responded with define white supremacists, because they couldn't have. You can't accept their terms. You're always at a disadvantage if you allow them to set the terms of debate. How do you deny the science of climate change? Yes, because it's not science. It's literally not what science is supposed to be. It's 100% political. It just is. It's not science. And we all normal. I do not know a normal working person. No matter what their social state, whether they're middle class, upper middle class, white, black, brown. I do not know a normal working type of person that believes this climate change bullshit. Now, I guess that's anecdotal. If you went to California, you went up to New York or somewhere and entered the bubble. I mean, you know, the NPC land or something. You probably could find plenty of people that, oh, yes, they absolutely believe it's real. But still, that doesn't discount the rest of the country that thinks it's absolute bullshit. But it doesn't matter. Once again, they don't care. It's like they believe if they keep telling you it's real, it makes it real. They have, in a way, in their minds, they've elevated themselves into being gods. I said this on the Friday show. I said the media is going all in with this concept of if they say it's real, then it's real. It doesn't matter how much bullshit it is. If they say it's real, then it's real. And it doesn't matter what's right before your eyes. They say it's real, so you have to accept it as reality. But it's a lie. And it always means more power for the globalists. I mean, Trump's response to that climate change, attempted climate change gotcha, was he wants pristine water, he wants pristine air. If environmentalism was truly defined as we want clean air, we want clean water, then we're all environmentalists. We want healthy food. How about that? How about these science people that we just want to save the planet? How come they never talk about all of the shit that they put in our food that's basically poison? I mean, you could grab anything off the shelf of the grocery store and read the ingredients label. It reads like an inventory list in somebody's chemistry lab. Nobody ever talks, they don't ever talk about that science, do they? They don't talk about the fact that you literally look at people in this country and they've morphed. I'm old enough, folks. I remember when people didn't look this way. Women didn't have these huge man jaws and this manly build. And guys didn't have this, like, this, I don't know, this where their chins just morph into their neck and they look all soft and effeminate and they even sound soft and effeminate. There's something, this goes beyond lifestyle. It's shit they're putting in our food and water. They won't talk about that. What about some science? How about some studies on that? Instead, they want to talk about making our lives better because we pay a carbon tax to the UN or some shit. I mean, it is so absurd. And yet it doesn't matter how absurd it is. They keep on with it as though it's reality. And if you deny it, then you're a science denier. Well, screw your science. It's not my God. I refuse to take a defensive position. Screw your science. Do you deny the science of climate change? Yes. Screw you. Screw your false-ass, fake-ass science and the horse it rode in on. They don't have anything after that, folks. I don't know. You know, maybe this is from being veterans of years of spatting with commies and the same tactics on the interwebs. But after you don't accept the terms of their argument, they got nothing after that. It's all founded on the appeal to authority in this case. You deny the scientists. Yes, screw them. They're con artists. They're being paid to get a certain result. You know, if a globalist commie like Bill Gates funds a research, they already know what result he wants. They're not going to come up. He's not giving them millions of dollars to get a result that he doesn't want to see. He just wants a paper that he can point to and say, science, to justify what he wants to do. It's so absurd that you questioned the righteousness of the holy priesthood of scientists. Yes, screw them. They're people. They are corruptible. They're people. And once again, what about the scientists who say it's bullshit because they didn't get the millions of dollars from Bill Gates or whoever, Soros, whoever the hell you want to name? Oh, well, they're non-persons. They're non-scientists. I mean, they're technically scientists, but they don't count. Why? Well, because they don't fit the narrative. They don't fit the forced meme that we're all supposed to believe, even though it's observably bullshit. Climate change, global warming. We know it's bullshit. They don't care that we know it's bullshit. You don't count anyway. They're just going to keep saying it's reality. And I guess the idea, maybe the concept behind it is if they repeat it often enough, you'll eventually just go along with it. Just piss on it. It's why they're going to ignore you pointing out that it's a lie. So just accept the lie. Just go along with it. Systemic or systematic, however you want to put it, racism. Here's another one. Here's another forced meme they're shoving down our throats right now. And you get into this stuff, the BLM stuff and all of this. And yeah, it's kind of like we talked about last week. You get into this and people want things to be one way or another, one side, you know, they, if, how do I want to say, if you counter the BLM people, then you have to go full badge licker, or vice versa. You can't point to reality for what it is. People tend to have a black and white type of thinking on these things, and I just absolutely refuse to do it. But this notion of systemic or systematic racism is bullshit. It's another forced meme. We know it's bullshit. The notion that the police are going around purposely hunting down blacks to put them in jail, it's nonsense. I saw a local news story the other day, and you know where it's going. You know what's good, because this is their excuse. They narrative, because it's built on the other lie that all the races are exactly the same. Again, when they say equality, they don't mean equality under the law. You say, well, we just want equality in this country. And a normal person thinks, well, that means everybody being treated equal under the law. Who isn't for that? I'm for that. I'm assuming you listen to the show. You're probably for that. That's not what they mean. And by the way, we don't have equality under the law, but it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with money. If you're loaded with money, you could probably have like dead hookers stacked up in your basement, and you probably get off with a wrist slap. But if you're a poor guy and, I don't know, you walk out of the store and forget to pay for something, you could very well do hard time because you're poor. That is the inequality in our system. It is not about race. But they have this, they start with the lie that all the races are exactly the same while telling us that diversity is our strength. Never mind that that's a contradiction right off the bat. If everybody's the same except for the color of the skin, then how does diversity even exist? Because we're all exactly the same, right? Real diversity requires the notion that races are different, and they are observably different. I don't know why they're so afraid of that fact. Why are they so afraid of the idea that races are different? Why is that a thing? I think it's a part of nature. Black people they think differently. They have a different way. Asian people are the same way. We all have a different, the different races are just simply different. And yet they're so threatened by this very concept, this notion. So they put out the idea that all the races are exactly the same, but that runs into a problem. It's like when they always tell you it's time in this country we have an honest discussion about race, but they never mean that. They always mean you need to sit here and be lectured to about how if you're white, everything that's wrong in this country is your fault. How about we have an honest discussion about race? Good, it's overdue. I'm on board. Can we go ahead and start talking about the black crime rate? Oh, no, you're a racist, evil thinker. You can't talk about the black crime rate. Sit down and shut up and let me tell you about systemic racism. It's a lie. That's all. I started to tell this today, and I got off on a tangent. I saw a local news story the other day, and of course, we're being bombarded with the fake meme of systemic racism right now. I saw a local news story the other day on the TV, and they're like, you know, police are looking for a suspect who broke into and burglarized a Ronald McDonald House. And if you don't know, Ronald McDonald Houses is like a charity thing set up to where like people, like if their kids are getting like cancer treatments or something like that, and they need a place to stay and they don't have very much money, they can go stay at the Ronald McDonald House. That's usually located near the hospital, so that, you know, it accommodates. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's not something you would typically think, hey, let me go burglarize it. Police are looking for the suspect who burglarized and stole a bunch of TVs from the Ronald McDonald House. And you're just waiting for it. I'm sitting there literally saying out loud, waiting for it. Waiting for it. Of course, we're not going to get a suspect description, but at some point in time, we do have surveillance video. And we get a still shot from the surveillance video. And there it is, the systemic racism once again. Well, know the outcome. We know where this story's going before we even get there. Must be that systemic racism once again. Because of their lie that all the races are exactly identically the same, the only difference is skin tone. They have to defend, you know, because everybody knows more blacks are going to prison for crimes. And so they have to, that degrades the original lie. So they have to come up with a justification for it. And the justification must be that the police and the court system are just going around, don't like darker skin tones. And so they're throwing people in prison for no reason at all. They're just like, we're just going to go round up a bunch of random blacks today, spend a lot of money putting them through the court system, paying for court appointed attorneys so we can put them in jail, because I hate that skin tone. I just, it's so cringy. I just can't stand that. That is the notion. That is essentially what they're saying when they talk about systemic racism. Well, it's absurd on its face, but it doesn't stop them from going on about it. President Trump, what's your feelings about systemic racism? Please define that. This is always, most nine times out of 10, when they hit you with this bullshit, the correct response is to stop everything and have them define what that means. What does that mean, systemic racism?
Well, it just means the entire country is a setup to where black people are picked on. Or it's if they try to define it, more than likely they'll try to dodge that. They'll try to, you know what it means.
No, I don't. Tell me.
You're just playing dumb. No, you're apparently, but you threw the term out there. Let's hear what it means so we can see if it exists.
If I agree with you that it's a thing, it's not that hard. You say it's a thing, you should be able to tell me what the thing is, and I can tell you if I agree that it's a thing. But it's a nonsensical term. We know it's bullshit.
The police, the courts, they just hate the black skin tone, so they're putting them in jail.
No, it's because they're committing more crimes. When you hear your local story, you know, somebody saw another one. Saw another one this morning right before recording this show.
Violent convenience store robbery. Here's the surveillance footage. The clerk is being beaten. It's more of that systemic racism. These surveillance videos are racist. We've got to stop. We got to stop it.
It's funny and it's laughable, but it's not. It's serious, because if you're going to accept this, then what's the answer? We just don't put blacks in jail for anything ever. And that's apparently what they're demanding at this point. They're demanding that blacks not be put in jail for anything, ever, no matter what they do, because otherwise it would be racism. Because we have to, once again, support the original lie that there's no difference between the races. This is where Christianity really helps you out. I mean, those of you who are non-believers, this is where Christianity and understanding these things really brings clarity to you, because Jesus is centrally defined as the truth. They run around talking about Jesus is the love. He's love, 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 love. The central word that Jesus used to describe himself is the truth. And so you understand that this nation and this world is more and more satanic. No, I'm not getting into the Christian segment. I'm just explaining from a Christian's perspective how it helps you to understand these things. Because if Jesus is the central word describing Jesus Christ is truth, then this world and this nation is satanic as hell. Because everything is a lie. Because if Jesus is the truth, then the polar opposite of that is the lie. And that is satanic by its very nature. Lies are satanic in nature. And everything, virtually everything in the West now and in this world is founded on lies. All of these false narratives, they're lies. And they're demanding that you accept them as truth. They demand that you bow down and worship them. Bow down and worship the lie. See, if you're a Christian believer, this makes more sense to you than if you're not. And again, I'm not trying to convert you as a non-believer, but I'm just explaining as a Christian believer, you have this extra layer of perspective where this shit makes sense to you, where otherwise you don't. It's like, but why? But why? But why? But as a Christian believer, you understand the motivational why. This is satanic as hell, because it's all lie, 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 lie. They'll use a lie when the truth would suit their cause better, because they can't help it. This is of the father of lies. It gives you another level of understanding. Like I said, I'm not getting off into the Christian specific segment yet, but we are fixing to get into that. What does all of it mean to you? I mean, it can seem pointless that, you know, climate change, systemic racism, the COVID, whatever the case may be, that they constantly bought. You may know that it's a lie, that they keep on talking about it anyway. You stuck isolated in the in Gabschwitz and telling other people that already know that it's bullshit. I'm gonna post this thing up and it's bullshit on Gab, and it's somebody that's on Gab. I mean, yeah, I'm not downing Gab. It's know, I give them credit would do. At least I don't get banned from there. But, you know, you post these things up and the only people are going to see is other people that already pretty much know the same thing as you. It's just kind of pointless. You're isolated. So it's why it's allowed to exist, is because you're isolated. The only people you're talking to are other people that they've isolated as well. They don't care. They just don't want your ideas getting out to the general population. That's why you can't be on Twitter or Facebook. They don't care if you're on Gab. You're isolated. You're not a threat. When you're on those other platforms, other people are being exposed to these truths, and that cannot be allowed because everybody must bow down before the lie. But it's important for you to understand. It can seem pointless, but you have to understand. You have to recognize these things and internalize it. Because what this does is it eventually starts breaking you down mentally. It'll break you down mentally. It'll break you down spiritually. It just to be constantly like your voice doesn't matter, that the truth doesn't matter. What does it matter that this is the truth? They're just going to pretend it doesn't exist, but it does matter. It does matter. The truth doesn't change. Their lies are always morphing. It will break you down mentally. If you're not a Christian believer, like I said, I'm not off in the Christian specific segment. This will break you down mentally, so you have to internalize this reality that this is being done on purpose. They're not ill-informed. They're not just, if you could talk to these people and get them to listen to you, they would change their mind. This is intentional. It goes down to their very being. They can't help it. But you need to understand what they are doing, that it is an intentional thing, that they have an end goal here. You have to understand that so that it doesn't break you down mentally. You combine all of this with what they're doing, people losing. There's just all the other day that all these thousands of people are going to get laid off in the airline industry because the only thing that's been keeping the airline industry alive for apparently months now is government money. Because what they did as a result of the pandemic. No, it's a result of what they did in the name of the pandemic. Now all these people are going to lose their job. Reality is coming home. If they would have crashed it all at once, there would have been real riots in the street. So they had to put some government money out there to keep everybody docile. But now they're ready to dry that up. Everybody's adjusted to the new reality. Now they can yank the money. Welcome to your new poverty reality. With all of these things going on, we're seeing and we're going to continue to see more and more people go off the rails. People you know. People you know in your real life, maybe even family members, you're going to see people going batshit crazy. You're going to see people going off the rails. You're going to see people doing crazy shit, violent shit. Because they're psychologically, they're mentally breaking down from this absolute intentional programming of a program of telling you that this lie and telling you it's real and doing these things, people losing their jobs, people not being able to go along with their regular. You can't go on with your normal life. I just keep my head down. I don't care about any of these things. I don't care about politics. I'm just going to keep my head down and go about my normal life. But you can't because they took your job away from you in the name of a hoax flu. You can't dodge it. You can't escape it. It's reality. You're going to see people going off the rails and you have to understand what is being done so that you don't go off the rails. So if you're off the rails and go nuts, then you're no good to yourself. You're no good to your family. You're no good to anybody. Got to stay sane in these trying times. We've got to wrap up on that note and get to the Christian specific segment this week. Time is flying by. I'm telling you, I told you we got a lot of stuff to cover this week. So get on in here and fill those pews. Check your coffee cups. That's what I'm going to do. Get all ready. Get all cozy. It's time for the Christian specific segment. The sermon this week in the Church of the Lampshade. So now that you're good and cozy, this is always where, it's always where I pause. You know, I sit here and on a roll with the show and I pause and I go make a fresh cup of coffee, walk around, stretch the legs for a minute. Try to come back fresh for the home stretch, for the home sprint of the show. I've expended this much energy and we got to keep the energy level up. Truck on. I can't imagine doing the show every day. I would go insane. And I just don't have the energy. Don't have the energy for it. Okay. This week, of course, we'll start off with our scripture reading. And this will mean something for you. It'll mean something for you. We're going to do one of Jesus's. Of course, Jesus was big on on doing parables. And a lot of people don't get the parables anymore because, you know, he was addressing an an agriculturally based society, people that were connected to the land. And we live in this screwed up modern era where people are living in these cities and they have no connection to nature, the land. So a lot of these parables are hard to understand. But he was big on talking on parables. And we're going to do a parable today. We're going to cover a parable today that honestly has always been hard for me to grasp, hard for me to understand. And in the current times, this parable makes perfect sense. And so much of my life, I read this parable and I'm just like, I don't get it. It seems like contradiction. I don't understand why Jesus would tell this parable, what it means. But now we live in collapsing clown society. This parable means a whole lot. It makes a whole lot of sense. So I thought we'd go over it this week. I think hopefully it'll mean something to you too. We're going to go to Luke chapter 16. We're going to start at verse 1 and run through around verse 9 here. I may read the whole thing. I may stop in the middle of it. I don't know. But here we go. And he said also unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig. To beg I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me unto their houses. So he called every one of his lord's debtors unto him, and said unto the first, how much owest thou unto my lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, take thy bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. And then said he to another, and how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take thy bill and write 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward, because he had done wisely. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of the light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. Now again, this is a parable I've always had difficulty with, and probably many of you have as well, because if you're like my age, you grew up believing that, you know, we lived in a stable, well, we at one time did live in a stable society, and that things would get better and there would be a future. So you always held out this hope you'd read this parable to make any sense. But now that we live in collapsing clown society, it makes more sense, and it's very relevant to you today. One of the most important things, and I've stressed this, and I will continue to stress it, because if you're not doing this, you need to do this. And that is to really be building relationships with the people around you right now in your life. Not just people online, I mean people in your community. Do you know the people you work with? What kind of relationship with people you work with? What kind of relationship do you have with, near accessible family members, you know, people in your community, your neighbors, whoever it may be? Do you have any real life relationships? We're in a time when you've got to be, you know, and building those relationships means helping people out. You need to be, if you get the opportunity to help somebody out, and no, this isn't, you're just doing a regular modern cut church, you know, to give to the, no, hear me out on this thing. You get the opportunity to help somebody out, you're investing, because things are going south. We know things are going south. And one of the things that is going to be most important is having people that, you know, will be able to help you out in return. But see, it's a two-way street. You can't sit there and ignore everybody around you. Do your own thing. Be greedy. Be self-centered. Not worry about taking care of anybody. Not helping anybody when you have the opportunity. And expect that when the shit hits the fan, those people are going to be there for you, because they don't owe you anything. They don't feel like they owe you anything. If you now, when you take the, or if you wait until those times and then suddenly, hey, if I do this, you do this, you know, that just, well, you're just angling for something. When you help people when it's not necessary, when you do something for somebody that, you know, it's not a dire necessity right now, they will remember that. I mean, some won't. Some will be ungrateful, but that doesn't matter. They will remember that. And down the road, when it becomes necessary to rely on the people in your community, rely on the people around you, and you're depending on each other to basically survive, to get by. If those things come back to you, that investment, that seed you planted comes back to you. Now, in this case of the unjust steward, see, he gets called in. He says, well, rumor has it that you've been wasting my goods, that you're a bad manager. And I'm going to give an account of yourself because I'm going to cut your ass loose. Well, this guy's sitting here going, man, what am I going to do? This is all I know how to do. You know, and I'm going to be reduced to digging for, you know, barely getting by. Maybe you can buy a little bread or just simply begging. And he's like, I don't want to do either one of those things. So what can I do? So he decides, hey, he hasn't cut me loose yet. So he starts calling in these people. This is his job, is to handle the books, as it were. And he calls these guys in. Well, how much do you owe? Well, I owe this much money. Here, take your bill right now. Scratch that out. Put this. Pay it now, and you're paid off. I'll stamp it right now. Once it's stamped, he can't go back on it. He can't go, well, that doesn't count. Because right now, I'm still the manager, and I still have this authority. Do it now. And so all these people are like, yes, yes, yes. Because he's planning ahead. He's planning ahead that... When I don't have a job, because it looks like I'm going to get cut loose from here. When I don't have a job, these people then are going to owe me. These people will then pay it back to me. They will help me out. When they hear that, hey, this guy that helped me out, now he's down on his luck. And I've got the opportunity to make sure he's got some food and make sure his rent's paid and I can help him out. He knows that's going to come back to him. And even the owner who's going to cut him loose has to admit that it was a wise thing to do. Now, this gets interesting because Jesus was telling this parable directly to his disciples. And we see here in verse 8 where Jesus says, for the children of the world are in their generation wiser than the children of the light. In their own way, the worldly people are wiser. In a way, the unjust steward is more wise than the children of the light. What does that mean? Because a good Christian believer, you read this story, what do you think? Well, the manager is basically stealing from the guy he works from. The 100 score, whatever, the amount of wine, the amount of wheat, the things that he owes the boss, having them write that off the bill, he's essentially ripping off the boss. And the believer reads that and says, my gosh, that's wrong. It would never do that because it's stealing. And Jesus is saying, in a sense, this is how the people of the world in these manners are wiser than the children of the light, because children of the light would sit there, well, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to be accused of stealing. And I'm just going to go out here and I guess be destitute and hungry and living on the street. And they're going to be worse off for it. So Jesus is saying, in this sense, the people of the world are wiser than the people of the light, because the unjust steward, he's sitting here, he's setting himself up. He ain't going to be digging in the ditch. He ain't going to be, cleaning out donkey stalls or begging on a street corner, starving to death, dying of malnutrition. He's setting himself up where the children of the light wouldn't do what he did, and they're going to wind up suffering. And I say unto you, let's look at verse 9 again, because this gets down to who do you build relationships with? Who are the people you work with? Do they agree with everything you say? And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. Don't make qualms about, I can only build relationships with people that agree with me on absolutely every single thing. I can only build relationships with those kind of people. I can only build Folks, we're heading towards hard times. I wanted to get into this because this is the reality of the times we're heading into. We don't know what they look like. We don't know how this plays out. I don't sit around like agonizing every day over things I have no control over. But I have no doubt that this country's done. That is reality. You're not going to, they talk about, we're going to put the nation back together. We're going to bring the people back together. That is not going to happen. That is not realistic. It's like when you see people and it's like, grandma is like 94 years old, has stage 4 cancer and is on life support. And they're on there praying, God save her. I pray for a healing. Well, that's not realistic. It's at the end of her life. It's how this nation is, how this country is. I mean,
we're going to bring the country together and America's going to be stronger than it's ever been before.
This thing is done. We don't know how it plays out. We don't know how ugly it gets. We don't know how dire the situation is going to be, but it's coming. We are in the middle of a transitional time, a great upheaval in your lives. And I know none of us want it. We don't get to choose what time we're born into. But that's the reality of the world we live in. And the more personal relationships you build with people who can help you out and you help them out, just like the steward in the story, you build in relationships with people around you so that, you know, when the shit hits the fan, you have something already established. It's, if you wait till things go south, it's too late to start building those relationships. It might be an every man for himself sort of situation. They're going to be like, who are you? You know, I was down on my luck and I needed $20 for bus fare and you told me to go piss off. You know, now, oh, I've got a meat locker full of meat and you're wondering if I can throw you a pork chop. Not going to happen. You build the relationships now. What if I'm wrong? What if I'm not? But what if I'm wrong? What if this whole thing isn't heading south? And we're going to wake up next year, a year from now, and we're back in 1985 with a future, you know, where we feel we have a future ahead of us, the country. We're not in the middle of a communist revolution. We're not in the middle of society ripping itself apart. We're not in the middle of a constant just barrage of lies from the media. Everything is just magically stepped through a time portal, and our society is reverted to normalcy. What have you lost? You have a relationship with people around you. You better know people. You're interacting with people in your real life, with the people that work around you. You're able to laugh and joke and talk about things. You haven't lost anything. You've still built something. Even if I'm wrong, and again, I'm not, and the society isn't coming apart, you haven't lost anything. What did it cost you? What did a little bit of charity on your part to help other people out? What did it even cost you? And you're better off for it. Even more so in a collapsing society, when being able to depend on the people you know, depend on the people around you, is going to be ever more important. This is important. It's important because leftists are not the only ones that I see sometimes that aren't living in reality. I see people that are still in very much denial of what's going on in the world around them. You point these things out and they want to have a conversation about, you know, oh, this utopia we're going to create someday. That's not reality. It's not where we are. I don't know how to put it. You may be in a situation in the future, and maybe not the not so distant future, that the guy helping you out is the black guy you work with. No, I'm not doing multicultural diversity utopia preaching here, but this is the realistic thing. The people around you are who you're going to depend on.
So, well, I want to discuss shipping blacks back to Africa, Lampshade. That's what I tuned into this show for. I'm here to discuss the reality of the world that you're facing right now, and is not the utopia that you're going to create someday, that you have absolutely no freaking plan how you're going to get there. I'm talking about survival.
You may be, you know, if all you want to do is sit around and talk about the way you want things to be, the things you want to do that you have no power to create or to do, then you're in denial of reality. Just as these leftists, these commies pretend they're going to somehow create a utopia by overturning the apple cart and burning cities down. It's not reality. And this is where we're headed to. This is, I mean, like I say, I hope I'm wrong. I wake up every day hoping I'm wrong about these things. I do not. I'm more sympathetic all the time to the prophets of the Old Testament, because they would get accused. They would be like, you know, well, the king of Babylon's going to come and screw your shit up. I mean, he's coming. He's going to push your shit in, and God isn't going to save you because he's mad at you. He's pissed, and this is his judgment.
He would never do that. The king of Babylon is an ungodly, wicked man. Yes, but you see, you are supposed to be the people of God.
So he's going to have this ungodly, wicked kingdom come in here and push your shit in because he's mad. He's pissed at you.
Well, you just want that to happen. You probably are secretly working for the king of Babylon, and you're trying to bring everybody's morale down so that we'll just surrender or something.
They'd get accused of wanting to bring it about. I wake up every day hoping I'm wrong. I wake up every day hoping that life can somehow revert some form of normalcy. But that's not reality. It's not where we are. It's not where we're headed. Getting a grip around reality is getting a grip around the truth. And again, as a Christian believer, that's what we always should be seeking, is a better grip, a firm grip on truth and on reality. There's no reason to believe this trajectory is going to change. Think last year at this time. We didn't have this COVID nonsense a year ago. And how much more downhill things have gone in simply a year. This is breathtaking fast speed, folks, especially in the context of history. 5 years ago, think about 10 years ago, we're nowhere near this level of clown sanity that we're, that's a new term, I'm going to keep that, clown sanity that we're at right now. If you look at, just go 10 years, 15 years back and look, think back, reflect back on that, to where we are now. Is there any reason to believe that this trajectory is going to magically turn around, that this momentum of where we're going is somehow magically going to turn around? Is that realistic thinking? As we look at things spiraling downhill, it's important to start thinking about what can you do to survive, because we don't know how bad it's going to be. I'm hoping it's not that bad. But as the saying goes, you know, hope for the best and plan for the worst. We don't know. And building real relationships with the people around you, it's going to be more important than ever. And again, if somehow magically things turn around, you're no worse off for it. Jesus told his disciple, make friends of the mammon of unrighteousness. Because when you fail, they might take you in. Yeah, this will come back around. This will come back around. Don't shun anybody just because. You don't know when you're going to have to depend on the people around you. I mean, nobody's telling you to go steal from your boss and write people's bills down as the unjust steward. That is just simply an illustration about planning for the future and understanding, you know, the steward realized that hard times were coming. When it became a reality to him that hard times were coming, he started making definite plans. He didn't just hope. He didn't just say, well, I hope everything works. He started taking concrete action. Now, what he did was morally wrong. What he did was even sinful, because you could say he was stealing. Well, he was stealing. But he took, even the guy he stole from had to admit that what he did was smart. What he did was wise in its own sense, because he's taking care of it. He looks and he sees things are going to go downhill. I'm fixing to hit a wall of hard times. He didn't sit around just, well, I hope it all works out. He took concrete action. He said, what can I do? This is, so he resolved unto himself, this is what I can do. This is what I have the power to change. I can sit here and write these people's bills down. And then later on, when I lose my job, shit hits the fan, and I'm looking at being forced out on the streets, these people will turn around and help me out. If I go to the guy that I said, oh, you don't owe nearly that much wheat, and say, hey, can I work as a harvester for you? And maybe, you know, and the guy's like, oh, heck yeah, I'll put you on. No problem, dude. I'll help you out. Here's some free food to get you going. You know, I owe this guy. This guy helped me out, so I'm going to help him out. Even among non-believers. You know, you get friends of the, you got to be planning, because this way you're investing in the future that when it hits the fan, when things go downhill, you've got other people to fall back on. It is important. It is the reality of the world we live in. I mean, unfortunately, and again, it isn't like, oh, I'm thrilled to live in a time of a collapsing society. It's nobody chooses it, but this is what we got, and you're better off dealing with that reality. We put things that are out of our control. We acknowledge that those are in the hands of God, but we do the things we can with our own hands. And I think that's part of what's reflected in Jesus's admonition that the children of the light, in a way, the people of the world sometimes are wiser in this aspect when it comes to worldly things and children of the light. Because, you know, Christian believers so often would just sit there and not take any action of their own. They'll just sit there and say, well, I'm just going to leave it in the hands of the Lord. I'm going to pray for God to do it for me. But I mean, there's things that they could do. There's concrete steps that they could take, but they want to push it all off onto God. They don't want to do, I mean, the things you can't affect, the things you can't do anything about, those things are in the hands of God, literally, because you don't have any way to affect them. But when you have things that you can do, you can't just sit on your hands. You can't just sit on your hands and say, well, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to ask God to take care of everything for me. I mean, you have got the things you can do with your own hands, you got to do that. If you can take actions to make your life better, if you can take concrete action to better your life, to get yourself out of a situation, you've got to do that. And it's like the old saying goes, you know, the good Lord helps those who help themselves. You know, God's more likely to bless you and help you if you take concrete action, you take concrete steps yourself, than if you just sit on your hands and shove it all off into Him and say, God, serve me. Do it for me, God. I don't want to take any action of my own. Those things that He has control over that you don't have any control over, it's a lot more likely, I think, to go in your favor if you take the concrete action and you take the steps that you can take with your own hands. If God looks and sees you're doing the best you can versus you're sitting on your ass waiting to shove it all off on Him, I mean, come on. How would you feel in that situation? If you have a chance to help somebody and they're deadbeat and a slothful person and they don't want to do anything for themselves, but they want a handout, are you more likely to help that person or the person that you see struggling and doing everything they can and they just can't seem to get by, but they work hard and they're trying hard and you've got the opportunity? Which of those two people are you more likely to help out? Well, it's that way with God. We are made of God. We are made as an image of the Lord. And in that way, God operates much the same way. If you're struggling, if you're trying, you're taking the best steps you can, He's more likely to bless you and help you out down the road on those things that you don't have control over than if you're just sitting around. That just really irks me, because a lot of so-called Christians do that very thing. They will take no action of themselves. They will just pray for God to handle it. God, I'm not going to do anything. I'm waiting for the rapture. He's just going to take me from this and I won't have to deal with it at all. It's not reality. Good Lord helps those who help themselves. You're sitting on your ass. You're not doing anything. Why should God do anything for you? Really, though, I mean, it's mind-blowing to me. And it's a common thing in modern Christians to sit on their hands and say, I'm leaving everything to Jesus. Well, Jesus doesn't want you leaving everything to Him. I mean, yes, you should leave things to Him that you have no control over. Yes, you should seek and pray and ask for His guidance when you're not sure what decision to make. But ultimately, there are going to be decisions that you're going to have to make, and you can't shove them off on Jesus. You can ask Him to guide you. You can ask for His guidance. You can look in the Scripture. You can try to gain greater understanding so that you can make a wiser choice. But at some point in time, you've got to make the choice. It's not a good Christian thing to do, to just shove all the choices off on Jesus, do nothing, and expect Him to fix it all. That is not the way It's not the way this thing works. Have you ever tried to help somebody with their homework? Maybe you were a good student and you tried to help somebody with their homework. They're struggling in class and everything. You tried to help them with their homework and you're like, okay, well, you know, sit down. And you're showing them. And after a while, you realize that they're just trying to get you to do the homework for them. Have you ever seen that? You know, you're like, okay, hell, I'll sit down here and I'll show you how to do these math problems. You take this over here and they're like, oh, okay. But you keep doing this and before you know it, you've solved half the problems for them. And then you realize they're just gaming you. They're not trying to understand the math problems. They're just trying to get you to do the homework for them. You're not going to game the Lord. He's not going to do your math work for you. He's not going to solve your problems for you. Yes, He will help you. And yes, the things that are out of your control, He can bless you and turn those things around. But you can't shove all the math problems. He's not going to do your homework for you. This life is your trial. And at some point in time, you have to make decisions. You've got to make choices. You've got to figure it out. This is what develops you. This is why you are here. This is what develops you spiritually so that you become a mature spirit so that when you leave this realm, enter the eternal realm, you're of some use to God. This is why you're here. At some point, you got to make decisions. At some point, you got to make choices, and they may be wrong. God's going to have a lot more mercy on you if you try your best to make the right decision and screw it up than if you sit there, I'm just leaving it to Jesus. I'm not going to do anything. And yet we see this. We see people with that attitude. I don't know how many Christian people I've seen in my life that were literally like that. They won't make a decision in their life for anything, just waiting for everything to just happen. I'm leaving it to Jesus. Well, Jesus says you got a choice here. You can do A or B. What are you going to do? I'm not going to make a decision. Jesus is going to make the decision for me. Jesus is not going to make the decision for you. Get off your ass, pick which one, and live with it. is how life works. And so, yes, you may choose wrong. And again, God's going to have more mercy on you. And look, when it comes to God's plan, he already knows how it works out. It is not possible. If this is any consolation for you, it is not possible for you to screw up God's plan. Yeah, you get that attitude like, man, you're facing a choice. You don't know what to do. You're not sure what decision to make. And you think that you're going to make a decision that screws up God's plan for your life. It is literally not possible for you to do that. So take comfort. Even if you make a decision and afterwards it's like, oh man, that was a screw up. Trust me, it fits into God's plan. You are not going to screw up God's plan for your life. You can't, because he already sees how it plays out. He's in the eternal realm. He's not stuck in time like you. It's not like he has no clue how this works out. He already knows what you're going to do. It's factored into the plan. But you can't shove everything off on him. You've got to make the decision. You've got to make the choice over the things that you have control over. You can't just live your life on pause. Yes. I start these things, and I wonder, will there be a word for the people from the Lord? Where is it at? And that is the word for you for this week. You cannot screw up God's plan for your life. Don't worry. God knows how it plays out regardless. It's fine. Look, I'm not telling you don't seek God's guidance. Don't try to take everything on for yourself. I'm not telling you to try to take everything on for yourself. I'm not telling you to do that. It's ask for God's guidance. Pray every day. Try to pray every day. Try to read a little scripture every day. Try to do the best you can to be as close to him, as in tune with him as you can, so that you can make the right decision. But understand that at some point you've got to make the decisions in your life. You have to make the decisions for your life. It's not denying God. That's what God put you here to do, to make the best choices, to make the best decisions that you can for your life. You don't get to shove that off on him. You've got to do that. So as we wrap up, because we're already 10 minutes past an hour-long show already, so we need to wrap this up. Look, depend on, build relationships with people. I hound on this all the time, but it's very important. You need to build relationships with the people you know in your life, the people that you have interactions with on pretty much a daily basis, whether that's your neighbor, or maybe you belong to a club, or you're a veteran and you know the guys down at the VFW hall. Whatever the case may be, you need to be building real life relationships, and building those relationships means when you get the opportunity to help people out, do that, because perhaps down the road they might be able to help you out, and it's going to become very imperative that you have people around you who can help you out, that you can be stronger, one and the other. And finally, understand that there are decisions you have to make in life. There are directions. God has a plan. God has a plan, and he already knows how it plays out. You're not going to screw his plan up. But you do have to make a decision. God has no patience for people that just don't want to make a choice. He will make it work out. You trust in him. You lean on him. The things that are out of your hands are in his hands, and he's factored those things in as well. But you can't shove everything off on him either. You have got to make a choice. That's why you were here. That's what this life is about. All of these things taken together should strengthen your faith. Strengthen your faith as believers, make you better men, make you stronger, because you're going to need all the strength. You're going to need all the fortitude that you have, that we have moving forward. This is the reality of the world that we live in right now. We live in a tumultuous, judgmental time. Understand these things. Because it is, it's very important. I've rambled on enough. I get rambling like this sometimes, and it's like, okay, I've made the points I need to point. How can I wrap this up in a clever manner? But there is no clever manner this week. We're just going to wrap up. We're just going to just cold wrap that up this week. But hopefully there's something in here that as a Christian believer has strengthened your faith, has helped you to understand how all of this works, and to understand the world around you. People act like, these things are just, like religion, like your faith in the Lord. These are abstract concepts that don't really have any application in the real world in your life. And that's so untrue, because it's very much centered on your life right now, how you live. It's all centered on how you live. It very much affects the choices you make, your life moving forward. This isn't an abstract concept where you just go through life and then die and then hope you wind up, seeing a light and going to heaven or whatever. These things, these teachings, these concepts, they are applicable to your real life right now, every day, how you live, what you're going through, what you're going to go through in the future. It's all interconnected. That's what makes it. It's just a reassurance for your faith that it is real, because these things are applicable. These things are intertwined with your real life. They are not two separate things. It's all connected. And the more you understand that, the stronger your faith will be. Like I said, I'm rambling. There I go, rambling again, looking for a nice, clever way to wrap up. So, hey, I'm glad you joined us this week. Glad to get together with you this week. Hopefully, like I say, hopefully you got something out of it. Hopefully you enjoyed the conversation. I'm looking forward to next week's conversation. And, of course, don't forget, every Friday, pretty much every Friday, I sit down with Sven Longchamps for like a 30-minute discussion on something. We try to keep it lighthearted, so you might enjoy that too. Give it a listen. And be sure and give us a listen next week right here for the Church of the Lampshade Show.